When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
What's standing between you and your first sale on Shopify? Time, expertise, resources? What if you could multiply all three? Product descriptions? Done. Store insights? Delivered. 2 a.m. customer questions? Handled instantly. Entrepreneurs on Shopify are reaching their first sale faster with AI that works with you. Go to shopify.com/firstsale to see how entrepreneurs use AI to grow their businesses faster. That's shopify.com/firstsale.
Welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, hosted by me, Robbie Earl, and by my good longtime friend from work, Kyle Sconewell. If you were just joining us for the first time, welcome. Today is a type of episode that's sort of has a tradition of turning into its own thing, I guess. Sure. So who knows what this one's going to be. But it's always fun. This is when we get to, with the benefit of hindsight, as Ultron would say, revisit a film that's been in theaters for a bit, aside from our initial reactions episodes, which come out right after release. And today, as you've probably gathered from the title, we get to reflect on Black Panther Wakanda Forever, which I'm really excited to do. But before we get into that, I'm also excited because I've been out of the country and kind of off the grid for a couple days. Right. So this is actually my first time talking to Kyle in like a week, which is really strange.
It's awful. You're unbearably naive.
That was actually pretty good.
I tried to do it. That was a pretty good impression. Man, maybe I need to start looking into doing more impersonations.
I mean, I feel like generally that's what people keep coming back for.
Yeah, right. That's all we hear about. You know, we do this whole deep messaging about the themes of the MCU, and all I get is messages about, can you please just sing the Wakanda Forever theme song again, please?
Yeah. And I mean, honestly, fair. Every time, I was rewatching it for this episode,
I don't blame him.
As soon as I hear the cue, I'm like, wait, is that Kyle or is that Baba Maul? I think, still, I'm not sure to this day.
Well, in between filtering all those messages from listeners, I'm having to delete a few emails from Ludwig. He's like, hey, can you get over here and track this again? I'm busy right now.
Wow. Yeah, we've got a lot going on.
How was Nicaragua?
Man, it was incredible. I don't think I had any idea what to expect because as much as Candace and I have traveled, which I feel like we've been lucky to travel a decent amount between my music career and then just opportunities we've gotten in the past couple of years in law career world. But I've never been really to Central America or really anywhere on this side of the world south of Mexico. And so it was a ton of fun. I was sending you pictures. We got to go see the inside of an active volcano, which is something that I've never gotten to do. And it was actually kind of great because we had this really incredible tour of Granada where we were staying, and we kept talking about all the history and how much it's all tied into like the Mayan culture and the Mayan traditions within that part of the world. And then I was thinking, you know, I'm prepping up for our Wakanda Forever reflection episode.
True.
Which really, you know, like the more I spend time with that movie and the more I watch it and the more I read about it is really intent on and really interested in exploring Mayan history and culture.
We have such a leg up on our competition in regards to you traveling the world doing research on where the film was directed or filmed or...
Yeah.
It's just crazy.
It's all a write-off, you know?
It's all a write-off. Speaking of world traveling, I did not world travel, but this was the week that I mailed out our artwork prints on the Friends From Work Plus side to our patrons there who support us that way. And one thing that struck me as I was doing this is how many international listeners we have. And so I'm not going to remember all of these, but I shipped multiple to Canada, the United Kingdom, Japan, Germany, Norway. I'm blanking. There was a lot more than
that's
this.
That's wild.
Yeah.
Japan?
And, I know, like, Japan.
These are all, wow.
And these are people that are paying for Friends From Work Plus. So shout out to all of you international listeners out there. If we've never given you a shout out to your beautiful country, I have not traveled the world enough. I would like to go visit your beautiful country. Australia, that was another one I sent a lot to.
Wow.
So yeah, shout out to all those people this week.
Man, that is so fun. That's really, I appreciate that. So thank you all.
And so now may be a good time to look into Friends From Work Plus if that's piqued your interest in the past. We have a lot of fun stuff going on over there. I just did a movie
especially
club.
Especially lately.
I did a movie club episode on Creed because Creed was directed by Ryan Coogler. It stars Michael B. Jordan, Tessa Thompson, and then Sylvester Stallone, who is Scar, and the music is done by Ludwig. So it's kind of fivefold.
I don't think I ever put all that together. That's wild.
And it was interesting to watch another Ryan Coogler film and see a few things that have tie over. So if something like that interests you, a deeper dive into other movies that have loose ties to the MCU, that was really fun. And I got a chance to bring on one of our listeners to help do that episode with me. And then today, releasing next Monday, I just did a full-blown Star Wars episode with another listener. And let me tell you, if I could give one pitch to toot my own horn here, I found myself by myself on an epic 35-minute rant. I mean, I got fired up. I don't know what happened. I just got so emotional about Star Wars. So the first 35 minutes is just a journey through my Star Wars background. And you know all these things. We've talked about them on the phone. I finally dove into that for all of our listeners. So again, all that to say, a lot of really fun stuff happening over on Friends From Work Plus. And that's not even to mention the Comics Corner stuff that you and Candace have been going into. You chronicled your time at the New York Comic Con. And now kind of a mashup of two worlds here. Candace is going to be on a main feed episode with us again because we have a really fun interview coming up that's kind of a spillover of the Comics Corner. So again, just one last pitch here. Now may be a good time to check out Friends From Work Plus. You can find that link on our website, the FFWpodcast.com, and click join the Patreon, join Friends From Work Plus, anything like that, you'll find it.
Well, and this is actually maybe the best time of year to join Friends From Work Plus because we're also about to start our annual friendly nominations, which which will all culminate, you know, in our friendly awards, which is the annual Friends From Work kind of best of the year awards for each of the MCU projects that came out in the preceding year. So the awards show will be... I'm really interested in this one, which we'll get into because we're going to have a phase four reflection and a lot of that will come up here. But the way this works is we, Kyle and I, will come up with a list of nominees in various categories across all these projects, from best actor to best music to best sidekick to best new animal friend. It varies. And there will probably be some categories that were around last year that won't be around this year and vice versa. But it's all super fun. However, while we do the nominating, we do not do the voting. The deciding. We don't at all. No fingers on the scales.
We vote independent in this.
Yep. The people that do the voting are our Friends From Work Plus subscribers.
It's really fun. It just is. It's
been one of the real highlights of the Friends From Work Plus platforms so far. So I say that to say, if you are interested, if you want to try it out, this is a great month to do that because you will have the opportunity to vote in our coveted Friends from Work Plus Academy.
Yeah. This is not just a sales pitch either. It is really fun, actually. I look forward to it every year, and yeah, those episodes are fun. So you can go back now and listen to our 2021 episode. It's weird because it's the friendlies. It's like the Super Bowl. It takes place in 2022, but we were covering the 2021. In this case, it'll be happening in 2023, covering the 2022.
I'll never get it straight.
All right, so let's get into our ranking and reflection of Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. So the reason I wanted to start with that track is because I want to do something new here today, Robbie. I was thinking about this. Let's do a quick little segment that we call Oversold, Undersold. And I want to go back and say, what are some of the things we oversold in our first initial reactions? And what are some of the things we undersold or missed in our initial reactions episode? We can follow up on that here. And the reason I play that track is because one of the things I didn't talk about enough, I undersold on the initial reactions episode, was not just the music. We talked about how the music was awesome, but when I watched the film a second time, I didn't realize how often Ludwig was playing with his original themes in really, really unique ways. So that's actually the last track on the album called T'Challa. So that must be when they're in the post-credit scene. And I just love that twist on that same melody we've heard 100 times from the first movie, but with the guitar building it there, and then the choir kind of swelling, and it's definitely a more emotional vibe. So I undersold how often he weaved in some of those themes. When I watched the film a second time, I realized there's a lot more than just it was well done.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I think we were so shell-shocked by how good the score was, just in general. Yeah, I don't think we had time to even delve into it because it was just like and that was a reaction of everyone. But yeah, I've really enjoyed getting to sit with that score more as an album as well.
So let me give you another example of what I'm thinking. I oversold how out of place some of Namor's dialogue felt. When I watched it a second time.
You oversold.
I oversold. When I watched it a second time, it wasn't nearly as unsettled as I remembered. Even the scene specifically that we reference where he's explaining like the exposition of what happened to him growing up, that even felt more natural than I thought the first time I watched it. So in regards to that particular character, I oversold my dislike for some of those things. It's even better than I painted it in that first episode.
I agree, actually. I got to see it again, and on the second and third time, I got to watch it in preparation for this episode. And yeah, I actually, that's a character, and not every character from this movie did that, and we'll talk about that, but that's a character that has improved every watch for me, bit by bit. Like everything about from the history to the way the character is portrayed visually, to the actual performance. I think I'm getting more and more excited about what future installments with Namor can look like.
Another thing we undersold, the future of Namor. I agree wholeheartedly. Now, keep in mind, in the initial episode, I remember we did like it. Like, I really liked Namor walking out of the theater. So just that one particular thing I know we made a comment on, I thought it was was better.
I did think, and I can't, I think we probably mentioned this in the initial reactions episode, although it's getting too far away now for me to remember. But yeah, I was sitting there thinking, you know, I'll probably reference this several times through this podcast. I re-listened to the first episode of the official Wakanda Forever podcast that Ta-Nehisi Coates is hosting. And it's kind of, it's weird because the podcast, I don't think really starts in earnest until like next year. And I think it's going to be going for a while as kind of a retrospective of the making of Wakanda Forever. But the first interview is, you know, really emotional interview with Ryan Coogler that we talked about some. And then they were giving some previews of future guests. And there's a clip from Kevin Feige talking about Namor and the introduction of Namor and how excited he is to see him kind of show up in like countless movies to come. And I was just thinking that's really unique. Like, I'm not sure that I can think of, maybe there is and I'm just missing, but in this moment, I can't think of another character that's been introduced as a villain, really. I mean, he is the villain in this movie. Mm-hmm. And also as like a character that has enough weight as a protagonist or potential protagonist mm-hmm. to stick around for his own potential film, but certainly to show up in a lot of other films.
Well, I guess that's the fun of the character, right?
Right. Well, and I don't even know if there's been a character that has been introduced as a villain that we expected to appear in other films, period. Hmm. Like there have been characters that carried over, you know, and like you could argue Thanos, but that's kind of different because that was an intentional peppering in to set him up. But like Ronan, you know, like Loki.
Yeah, I got one. Loki and Zemo. The fact that Zemo was then brought in as part of a show, basically, where he's like a main character. But yeah, but your point stands.
Yeah, I think it's just it makes for a really.
Actually, Zemo and Namor are very similar in character structure, I think.
Hmm. Yeah.
Because Zemo kind of gets redeemed in that show.
I think they are. And I think that's one thing that I think I undersold. And that's maybe a perfect transition here.
I love it.
I undersold how excellently Coogler moved this story forward and the franchise forward while also like really sometimes subtly but always really effectively giving Shuri the same beats that we needed her to have that T'Challa had for it to feel like she's earned the right to be Black Panther. And
we undersold Shuri as the Black Panther too in general.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I was thinking like, okay, yes, Coogler, obviously he goes back to Black Panther with Michael B. Jordan's character as Killmonger and sort of talks about a lot of that in some really interesting ways and revisits those ideas and shows her having the same conflict with him and really that T'Challa had with Killmonger. So we get those parts of Black Panther. But then, yeah, I mean, like we get real almost scene for scene recreations of T'Challa's origin in Civil War.
Which we totally undersold. We didn't talk about that much.
Because what I love about it too is, you know, I was watching it again thinking there, you know, there are certain staging things they could have done to really hammer in, like, this is what we're doing. You know, it's like, for instance, when Namor kills Queen Ramonda with a bomb, right? That Shuri isn't in time to save her from, which is exactly the same way that Zemo kills T'Chaka.
Good point.
Which T'Challa isn't able to save him from. And I was sitting there thinking at one point, like, oh, I almost wish we would have gotten the Shuri holding her in her arms, like the famous shot that we got of Chadwick.
Heartbreaking.
But then I was like, you know, I think that's the beauty of this is it's sort of like you have to sit with it to see what he's doing. Because if it were any more explicit, I think it would feel ham-handed. Like, it's like, because you don't want it to feel kitschy. Like, oh, look, we're, you know, we're redoing all these things. It all feels so natural and like it flows within the story that he's trying to tell anyway. But then, like, yeah, by the end of the film, you have this character that I was really skeptical about as the next Black Panther, because I felt like she didn't carry a lot of this like gravitas that Chadwick did and hadn't gone through these particular experiences. Coogler finds a way to put Shuri through the same journey in a way that also feels very unique to her as a character. And I think what's so impressive to me about that is you can get that fulfillment without it feeling like a retread. And I think that had to be hard to pull off.
All right, two-parter for me, piggybacking off what you just said. Part one, totally agree. I'm not even going to say I undersold it because I think I just kind of missed that portion of her story. Like, yes, giving her those Black Panther beats. I think about the scene of her finally showing up in the actual Black Panther suit and the way she talks to M'Baku, and M'Baku's kind of terrified that she's showing this like rage revenge thing. And I don't know if that's the exact same as the Black Panther, but it has a similar feel and beat to what he had to go through. For example, like when he was going to chase down Bucky, regardless of what it meant, and kill him because he wanted to. I think I was so in the mindset of, I think Nakia is going to be Black Panther, that I missed actually what he was trying to do. And that's my fault. That's my fault there. Part two is that I totally undersold Letitia Wright's performance in general. In the first episode, I remember saying specifically, she was really good. And that was it. We moved on. Uh-huh. It's better than she was good. She was great. Yeah. And I feel like she really owned it. Again, I think I was in the wrong headspace of thinking Nakia was going to get the role eventually. So that was not even fair to her performance. Where I think we totally nailed it. So not oversold or undersold. Where I feel like now looking back, we nailed is actually just the overall vibe of the episode and the consensus. This movie landed at 84% critic, 94% audience. And I think, if I remember right, I specifically said I think it will be 86%, which is, you know, this is before any reviews when I walked out of the theater. And I said, I can't see anyone in the audience walking out and saying, this is a rotten movie.
Right.
So I said, the audience score is going to probably be even higher. Who's going to dislike it? And I think that's exactly what happened. Everybody on our Slack is like, it was really good. Now, what's interesting is the other part of the vibe from that episode was that I was also like, but because it doesn't swing as big, I don't think it's going to get a 90 plus critic. And I don't think very many people are going to walk out going, that's my favorite Marvel movie ever. And I was right on that. I don't feel like in general the consensus has been that it's the best movie ever made. And I don't think that even amongst Marvel fans, there's been as much discussion on this film as some of the other films, I think, again, due to its lack of polarizing nature.
Right.
So in that way, completely nailed it on the first initial reactions episode.
I think there are a couple other things that I think back on that I think we nailed that I want to talk about in 1 second. But while you're talking about that early consensus and where we landed, I don't know that we've talked about that on here. I think we have maybe a bit. It is so interesting. Like, I've come to realize, man, like, as we've gotten further into this world and I pay more and more attention to these early reactions, I just don't think they mean very much at all anymore. Like, not like, I'm not saying, like, no one's first reactions to a film matter. What I mean by that is like the first tweets that come out, the first big headlines, I'm realizing like this is not just Marvel stuff. This is like, like indie films.
Avatar even. Oh, yeah, but
And that's what I was just thinking about that. I just checked, you know, we're recording this early in the week, so Avatar hasn't actually released yet. But as an example, what, like a week ago, a week and a half ago?
I know exactly what you're going to say.
When early reactions started, it was like, oh my gosh, this might be the best film I've seen in years. Like, this reinvents a blockbuster. Like, people were, like, freaking out about what this movie was going to be. And I was, like, even then thinking, I was starting to think, like, okay, before I start to go down this road, I've now been through several of these cycles where it's, because we've talked about that some with Thor Love and Thunder, which wound up being super, super low. But early on, everybody said it was maybe their favorite Marvel movie, definitely their favorite Thor movie. But then same to some extent with Wakanda Forever. And lo and behold, like a week and a half later, Avatar is currently sitting at 82%. And it hasn't released yet. I'm willing to bet that'll drop down a bit more because that's normally how that works. And isn't that just, yeah, I don't know. I don't mean to be super cynical there, but it certainly seems like there's no way to really garner much from those early reactions.
Totally. Two things I want to reiterate to us and that I want our audience to know and remember. First of all, rarely, if ever, does a movie go up as time goes on, right? Like every right. review of any movie ever that starts at a 95 will slowly work its way down as more and more people see it, just because that's how it works. So right. some of the best films of all time slowly work their way down. Secondly, you're totally right. I want our audience to just remember when those first reactions come out that that is the only time that as a content creator ourselves, mm-hmm. those people have a chance at really making a splash saying one thing or another. So just remember that's the frame of mind these reviewers are in when they're walking out, is that they don't have anyone else's opinion to judge it on, and they'd rather err on the side of it being click-worthy by saying it's the greatest thing they've ever seen.
Right.
And they want their name. I get this because I want it. They want their credit on the trailer, you know, that yeah. says, Robbie, astonishing friends from work. You know?
Right.
So you're going to use language like right. that, you know? But it is fascinating. It is fascinating because how do you discern then when someone's not doing that, you know?
Right. Well, it gets tricky too because it's like because of the nature of the early reactions, you start to get some distance from the movie and you're seeing more and more people talking about the movie and it's not out yet. There's not really anyone around that you can talk to other than, you know, you and me. And so as you see more and more reactions trending one way or the other, it's easy to be like, man, okay, like maybe these something that I thought about this, I was totally wrong on because everyone else is viewing it this way. And you start, like, for me at least, which I'm prone to do anyway, kind of second yeah. guessing and getting in your head about. And
but you just got to be you, man. Like, that's what I always say. Yeah. I mean, I said that to you the night of, too. I'm like, dude,
yeah,
we just
yeah.
got to post what we truly felt and not worry about what other people thought about it.
No, which is true. I mean, everyone else is already taken.
That's true. All right, more over and undersold after a quick word from these sponsors. I want to take a quick second to do two merchandise pitches here. First of all, check out our incredible sponsor, Epic Hero Shop, by going to epicheroshop.com today. If you use our promo code FRIENDSFROMWORK, you can save money off your first purchase at epicheroshop.com. They have the best merchandise for Marvel fans, DC fans, Star Wars fans, and just film fans in general. You're going to like the way you look, Men's Warehouse. And how do I know this? Because Robbie and I do. I myself have a TVA Loki shirt, a Superhuman Law shirt, a Miss Marvel shirt, a Moon Knight hoodie. I mean, how long do I need to go on? I have all the Epic Hero Shop merch. You're going to love it. Check out epicheroshop.com. And don't forget, as we're nearing Christmas, the Friends from Work merchandise makes an excellent Christmas gift. So go to the ffwpodcast.com and click on shop, and you can find our classic Friends from Work logo t-shirt and our 90s inspired vintage Marvel logo t-shirt, as well as a few, and I emphasize a few, random sized tank tops in the Thor Love and Thunder theme. So get yours ready for next summer. Sun's out, guns out. I'll send all those to you and I'll get them to you before Christmas time. So the ffwpodcast.com/shop.
I wonder, just going to ask this now, since we've actually got enough runway, soft poll, do you think there would be any interest in a 2023 version of a Suns Out, Guns Out, Friends From Work tank? Maybe, good question. Maybe like volume 3 themed? Question mark? Just throwing that out?
Yeah, also, that's a good point. So, you know, we like to build our merchandise based off these projects. So we got to look at what we have coming this year. Ant-Man themed merch or Guardians 3, more Suns Out, mm-hmm. Guns Out. The Marvels, that could actually make for fun Suns Out, Guns Out.
That's true. The Marvels logo is actually looking pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot to think about. Maybe that's even its own, maybe that's its own poll. Talking about the friendlies. Maybe we have a merch awards as well.
All right, Robbie, what else did we over or undersell or nail?
Okay, so yeah, I wanted to talk quickly about a couple other things that I thought we did nail, if I remember correctly. At least, you know, and again, this is us saying we nailed this according to us. So,
that's you know, so true. I nailed it because I said so.
And I still think that I was right. But again, I am prone to second guess things. So, you know, I'm always pleasantly surprised whenever something stands up the way I thought. And another thing that I really stand by is that the inclusion of Riri Williams here, I think, was a good idea. And in large part, it was done well. I don't think that the Ironheart of it all needed to be in this movie at all. Like, I just, in terms of her, like, it would be one thing if we got just the shot on the, like, in the whole kind of car chase scene that ends with the first Atlantean battle. Like, that's one thing. In part, it's kind of fun, too, because it's like, oh, like, that sort of looks like the Mark I armor, and then where could this go? But I think she stays in the movie too long. Like, I talked about on an earlier episode how I think of Wakanda Forever in large part as Phase 4's version of a movie that Marvel has had at least one of every phase, which is it's a sequel to one movie, but it's really as interested in world building at large. And I think like Iron Man 2 is an example of that. I think Guardians of the Galaxy in some ways is an example of that, to a lesser degree. Civil War is maybe the biggest example of that. And so I think about Civil War when I'm watching this movie, also because of some of the parallels we already talked about. And I'm like, we needed a Spider-Man amount of Riri Williams in this movie. And we got a T'Challa amount of Riri. Okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay. For me personally, in regards to Riri, mm-hmm. In episode 1, I said that I felt like her acting and her dialogue / chemistry was a little out of place at times, that she wasn't fully settled in. On my second viewing, I oversold that problem. So I'm going to back off that a little bit. I feel like her acting, her dialogue, and chemistry worked better the second time than the first time. And watching with Annika confirmed that. She liked it more than I did.
Okay.
However, on if in general, what you're saying just the Ironheart, but in general, did the movie even need Riri? Period. Yeah, I either nailed it or I undersold it. Like on the second watch, even more than the first time, I was like, what is she doing here flying around in a Power Rangers suit at the end of this fight? Like, I just totally don't need it. So I was already aggressive about that in mm-hmm. the initial reactions. I'm going to double down on that. And I walked out of the theater, and I always let Annika talk first because I have already seen it. When she watches it with me, I've already seen it. And so I don't want to, like, influence her opinion. She hasn't listened to the episode yet. So she doesn't know any of my feelings. Again, she doesn't want anything spoiled. So she doesn't let me say a word to her when I see it 2 weeks in advance. So I haven't talked to her, period. Then we watch the movie. She does not want me to talk to her at all during the movie. We walk out, and I want to let her say, what did you think? She doesn't even know if I liked it, dude. I don't even say, like, I can't even say, like, oh, it's good. She hates it.
You're just like, all right, time to go to the movie.
Right. She walked out. And it's always interesting to hear her concerns. I told you, remember, she walked out of Multiverse of Madness and she was red in the face. Like, right, she hated certain parts of it. And I was like, whoa, I felt this way, but not like the way you're portraying it here. She was hurt by that movie. That's the better way to say it. Not mad at it, but like,
wow,
that, you know. She felt the same way. She walked out and she was kind of like, the Riri thing is a little strange, right? And I'm like, totally. Like, I don't understand. Mm-hmm. Like, you said in the first episode, it felt shoehorned in. That's the word you used.
Right.
It totally does. I haven't backed off that after watching it a few more times. I get why they wanted to start introducing her. You're right. It's so much like Spider-Man in Civil War, where it's like, we want to introduce this character ahead of time. But I think you've landed on the perfect compromise, the Robbie Earl cut, which is like, have Riri in it, have her make an appearance. Maybe she doesn't have a suit finished yet, though, even. Maybe she's just working on it. And she's the one that was the scientist still that developed the thing. Okay, that's fine. But does she have to already have the ability to pilot the suit perfectly? And, like, does she have to then go to Wakanda and build a super suit with Shuri? Like, from that point on, what is it really adding to the movie? I'm not saying it's a disaster, but what's it adding to Wakanda Forever and those characters?
Like, I think, you know, Riri adds a lot in that it's...
Well, she can add to the MCU. Yeah.
Well, no. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, that's a whole different discussion. And I'm excited. This has no bearing on 100% my excitement for the character. You know,
no, like, I'm just reflecting on this film.
Yeah. Yeah. No, agreed. But I was just going to say, even within this film, I see what they're doing where they're saying we need a character that would be engaging enough and sympathetic enough for it to justify Wakanda going to war against Namor to kind of protect, right? Because if it's some like random American scientist that it is, you know, some like ex-SHIELD person or whatever, I don't think that Shuri is going to feel like it's worth going to like treat with Namor on behalf of. And so I see what they were doing there, but even that, I'm like, I don't know. Like, I think that once it gets to, like, even the scene with Ramonda's death, like, I appreciate the fact that she had that last chance to save her, and it was kind of the sacrificial ending. But talking about, like, the parallels, like, T'Chaka didn't have that moment. You know, it's like he didn't die saving someone. He just died, and it was still a very moving, very meaningful scene because of the impact it has on the other characters that are there to witness it, right? So I don't know that they needed that to like take it. Like, I feel like that's a real like, let's take a scene up to the next level by having them not just die, but die in an act of sacrifice. And I just don't know that we even needed that based on how much I was already like locked into Angela Bassett's performance in that whole movie as much as anything.
Which is
it
what
seemed
I
to just kind of muddy that water a little bit, right?
Totally. Which is a perfect transition into the next thing that we absolutely nailed. I don't know if you saw this news, but as of this week, Angela Bassett was nominated for a Golden Globe as Best Supporting Actress, which is what I called out. I said Oscar, you know, in the episode, but I was saying if this was going to be nominated for something, it'd be her. So shout out her. I think we nailed that. We praised her performance a lot in the first episode. I want to reiterate that. She's great and captivating to watch, and her death is very, very moving. And it seems like we were right because she's nominated for awards.
And that's so deserved. I won't go back through it because we talked about that a lot in the first episode, I think. But yeah, I mean, there are almost every scene she's in, I'm blown away by in this movie. And I don't feel like that's a reaction I normally have. Like, as much as I love these movies and how certain scenes stick with me, like, this is the first one I remember in a while being like, this particular actor was just, like, she was on fire when they were filming this.
So here's something we missed. Per our Slack and a few internet searches, I think the consensus is that we were led to believe that M'Baku is becoming the king of Wakanda. Mm-hmm. We were confused. And I still think it's a little strange, the pacing of that. Like, I feel like, why not make that even more obvious?
Right.
Don't you think Shuri could have showed up to that and been like, hey, I'm passing this on to somebody or something? So I think in general, it was portrayed kind of funny that it was kind of just thrown in. But I think we're supposed to believe M'Baku is indeed the king of Wakanda going forward. And Shuri is indeed the Black Panther going forward.
Yeah, and I think, like, there's a part of me that's like, we could have gotten a cool Winston Duke on the throne shot, but I also like, I like that we got to revisit the waterfall scene, but yeah, that was
it just shouldn't have been confusing, that's initially. All. Yeah, it shouldn't be confusing. That's not a,
the
that's
fact
not like
that
a
neither of us were aware.
That's not like a Christopher Nolan, like, hey, you should really have to figure this one out. Like, just tell me or not.
Right.
By the way, did you see the news this week that made me laugh so hard that in Oppenheimer for Christopher Nolan, he's not using CGI for the atom bomb. Did you hear this news?
Like, I don't even know what that means.
I think he detonated a bomb in the desert.
That's
insane. But the memes were so funny. It was like a meme of like Christopher Nolan after he's killed every person on Earth just to not use CGI. You know, it's like him with a camera. Anyways, sorry.
No,
I think that's about all oversold, undersold, or missed for me.
So I guess this is one final kind of undersold for me that I think will transition us into a different conversation, just reflecting more broadly. You mentioned this a second ago. I don't think I realized this until now. I think maybe like I knew it in my heart of hearts, but it's just now it's finally reached the surface. I don't think I like the Ironheart costume in this movie, like the final one.
Oh boy, he's back. Costume Robbie's back.
Man.
Don't let him get started.
I just don't. It's so weird because one thing, I mean, I think that Black Panther won the Oscar for costume design, right?
It was at least nominated. Yeah. Well, let me look it up. Keep going.
And in fairness, I get that this is more a kind of visual effects side of things than a costume, but I still have to imagine that you had some of the same folks in the room involved.
It did win.
Okay. And I just like, and even in this movie, right? Like, I think across both films, the costumes have been really incredible. Namor's costume is fantastic. All the Atlanteans, like all of that. It's one of the things that I loved that I talked about in our first episode, and that all stands up. Another thing I'm putting a pen in to revisit, now that I think about it, with Atlantis, so don't let me forget. But
okay.
Yeah, man, I'm just watching it at the end and it's like, I don't know. It doesn't look
Power
Wakandan.
Rangers. No, like, Power Rangers. It's strange. It's totally strange.
It's weird. It looks like Power Rangers meets like
anime.
Eve from WALL-E.
Yeah. Well, like kind of anime, like futuristic, like robot. It's so strange. It's so freaking strange. I hope that they change it for the show.
That's not like that's the other thing for me is it's like that's not how the, which is fine generally, but like that's not how the character looks in the comics. Like the character looks.
So why
looks,
they go that direction? Yeah.
Yeah. Like the character looks more just like a mini Iron Man, and maybe they just wanted to make her more distinct, but...
Well, I think they wanted to make her more like Wakandan futuristic tech, but I'm with you. My only thought there, though, is I think they'll leave it behind because the whole point was she had to leave the suit in Wakanda. So I think that's like
that's true.
Wakandan version of the suit, which I think looks dumb, but I think that for her show, it won't be that. I would be shocked.
Yeah. Okay, no, that's a good point, which is encouraging. Yeah, just strange. Also, to put a...
Keep going, rapid fire these, I love it.
Well, this is just... I don't want to rant about the Ironheart inclusion the entire episode, but I think the other thing that I realized on this watch is, like, you see her, like, the big, like, Tony Stark homage scene.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And then, like, the heart. Two things about that. One, we never know why it's a heart. Like, right? We never get told why that's the thing. Like, is that supposed to be like a heart-shaped herb thing? Is that where that's coming from?
Hold on. Good point, because does she ever say Ironheart?
I don't think so.
In the movie?
No.
Yeah, so why would she just be doing a heart?
Yeah.
But also, she's like hammering it out of like steel. And then right. her actual suit looks like futuristic. Like there's That's no steel true. On it.
Okay, and then final thing on that. I think what bothers me some about this, and this is exactly what would have been solved by just not having her around to that point in the film, right? Like, think about if the last scene even had just been the bridge scene. Like, maybe they, instead of taking her, they just take Shuri. And that's sort of the way that Shuri winds up down there. And they're just threatening to go back and find her. It's not that they're, you know, maybe that's the conceit. And the reason I say that is, like, from then on, there's never any other mention or connection of Tony Stark. Like, there's the one line when she's in the garage where she's like, is this Stark Tech? And then she's like, I knew it, when she puts the suit on. And that's fine. Like, obviously, you've had a ton of Tony Stark in the MCU. It's not that I need more Tony Stark references inherently, but for a character that is supposed to be kind of symbolizing the legacy of Tony Stark and that is clearly so obsessed with him as to have, like, built what's supposed to be an Iron Man suit, like, why is... it's just strange. Like, there's no mention of how he's a hero of hers or motivates her or what. And I get that they're going to come back and do all that in the Ironheart show.
But then why put it here?
Right. Exactly. That's what it's like.
Flustered it's just, Robbie is my favorite Robbie that ever happened on this podcast. Cause I'm seeing you right now. Our audience isn't, but I can see you getting so worked up and I love it. You're like, you're trying to choose your words, but yeah, it's weird. It's weird.
I want to, like, in closing that point out, like you said, like, I don't hear this as a rant against the character, against the way the character has been played. It's just simply, like, for the story that Ryan Coogler was telling in this movie, why, I just don't know why they felt they had to graft this on.
Totally. 100% agree. Something I missed, but there would have been no way to not miss it, okay? Mm. Dude, I saw this incredible behind-the-scenes thing. Did you see that behind-the-scenes bit about how Tenoch Huerta, that scene of him delivering that dialogue underwater, that monologue, uh-huh. to the rest of Atlantis, whatever we call him?
Uh-huh.
He actually did that underwater. That's him underwater for 2 minutes. He practiced holding his breath. And eyes open, the whole deal, the camera's underwater, filming him doing the dialogue. So he memorized his lines, rehearsed doing it underwater, and they shot the thing underwater. So when I said, like,
that's insane.
It's insane. And so I said, why does it look so much better than, like, Aquaman? Well, it's because right. they're actually just underwater.
Okay, I'm so glad you said that because that's
okay,
the
that's
other
crazy,
point.
Okay, that's crazy, though. Hold on, that's crazy.
Oh, no, that's wild. Which also, did you see that Ryan Coogler actually learned to swim so that he could direct those scenes?
No, and also he didn't know how to swim?
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, so he was like, I think at one point, you know, he maybe could have tried to direct things, like, not actually underwater, but he wanted to be, like, in it with the
Well, especially if some of this is actually being filmed underwater.
Yeah, seriously. And so that was the other thing. Like, it's interesting how certain kind of storylines gain life. And by storylines, I don't mean plot of the movie, but stories about the movie that people are telling. And one was that, like, the all of Talokan was too dark and it was so hard to see anything, and that was, like, somehow a big flaw of this. And I just have not, I've not felt that. And if anything, that was an undersold by me how much I love the way that Coogler depicted it, because
I hadn't even heard that.
Oh, really? Yeah, like, I've heard several people tell me that just personally that have gone to see it. Like a Long Night thing from that Game of Thrones episode. But I don't know. I think it's really cool. Like, I like how dark it is because I think that they really tried to capture what it would look like to have this underwater civilization. And I really respect like how far they went with it. And I liked the, like, I had never noticed the emphasis of the like vibranium sun that he has above the throne and how cool that is. And just all, it's so much more creative and so much more, like, it shows way more dedication on the part of the filmmaker than what we got in Aquaman. And it's like, and by the way, like, I think what's so fascinating to me that James Cameron can never do, or anyone can ever do with a totally made-up universe. I know, right? I'm saying anyone, but I'm really just meaning James Cameron.
But you but said I was thinking James about this. First. That James Cameron could never do. I mean, that anyone else could ever do, too.
I just, what I love about what Coogler was trying to do here with Namor, how much he let that be to his people, what Wakanda was to Shuri and T'Challa's, and that so much of the fun of the first Black Panther movie was what would it look like if you had this African culture that had never been colonized, that had never even really been impacted by Western society, and moreover was technologically advanced way beyond anybody else. And so I think we talked a lot about how Coogler was trying to do similar things and go back with Mayan culture. But even just paying more attention to the way he makes that look underwater and how much he's kind of digging into this, these kind of historical mysteries that I hadn't even really thought about in the context of this movie about these abandoned Mayan cities, you know, like explaining why they were abandoned because they, you know, at least this part of them, like, take this herb and then have to go into the to the water, and then like showing how that would progress in like a semi-modern way while still like in the same way that Black Panther 1 did the like Afrofuturism so well, like how that could look and bringing some of those Mayan design elements, for lack of a better term, forward. Like, I think that was an undersell for me, because that was such a cool idea. From what I have heard, that was totally Ryan Coogler's idea to, like we said, like Namor has, there's nothing like that at all in the comics. Like, I think he's the one that decided to run with it, and I think he's the one that felt really passionate about, you know, getting it right to the extent that that's a thing you can do in a movie like this. And yeah, I was very impressed with that, especially on my third watch.
Agreed. I have one final thing.
All right.
I don't know if this is undersold or oversold or missed or just I want to reiterate, I guess. Watching Black Panther Wakanda Forever a second time. Okay, let me do it this way. One part of it that I undersold, I brought up in that episode about how Shuri's story of non-belief in Wakanda and the spiritual side of Wakanda and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
I undersold how well they did that. I didn't realize, like, that's not just like a side theme. That is kind of like the theme of
the
her
line.
As Black Panther. It's that she doesn't fully believe in, like, she doesn't believe that T'Challa is even in the ancestral plane, right? Like, she doesn't believe that that exists. Mm-hmm. She thinks that technology and science is the answer to all of these outdated religious beliefs of Wakanda.
Right.
Which, again, we pointed that out, but wow, that's actually like a major theme and a theme that obviously mm-hmm. people have been debating for thousands of years.
Right,
and
right.
This was an incredibly deep and well done take on that. Like, even to the point when she's yelling at M'Baku at the end, it's like, mm-hmm. No, I'm going to do what I want to do. Like, I don't care about these past like traditions or what you're supposed to do. And I think that even reflects her character from the first film where, like, you know, can we all just go home and get this over with now?
Right.
Like, she's not into any of the traditions, the spiritual side of it. And then I think what Coogler is trying to show us is the fun development of her seeing her mother at the end and realizing that that part mm-hmm. is true. She does have a right to believe in that. So that is all true. And I think I undersold how important that was to the film. However, even on my second watch, I just wish they had landed that even stronger. Like, I wish I didn't walk out of the theater the first time slightly wondering if they fully rounded that off. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah,
that is such a good theme and a point that I wish was, like, hammered home. And I'm not sure the one shot of show them who you are from her mother, like, that I fully understood, like, oh, gosh, that's her going to the ancestral plane, and now she does see it, and she's not seeing Killmonger, and, like, that means not everything about ancient Wakanda is wrong. And, like, I don't think I left feeling that, and so that's partially a miss on my part, and partially I wish that was more sold to me than the first time. Is that fair?
So I think that's totally fair. I agree and disagree in that I agree that I didn't come away from my first viewing with as strong of an understanding of that as I have now. And I don't think that's just us, because Candace said something really similar, like, when we came out, where she was like, oh, I wish that was more of an emphasis, not even just it being explicitly the technology versus the spiritual side, but just the...
But also the traditions and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, the general, like, kind of battle within new. Shuri.
Yeah.
I think, and so I do think that that's something that didn't maybe come across as well as it could have, at least on a first viewing. Now, I will say, and this in part, you know, we talked about how in these screenings there are no trailers, and so it just, like, starts. And this movie starts with a whisper of dialogue. And there's no warning. So I'm not even sure I caught that first line on the first viewing.
She's praying.
Yeah. I don't think and if I did know that, I just kind of, I heard her praying and then was like, oh, she's praying for T'Challa, and then kind of moved past it. But in the prayer, she says, you know, I promise if you heal my brother, I'll never doubt you again.
Oh, see, I don't even know if I caught that.
Yeah. And so that's the opening of the entire movie. And then the final scene of the whole movie is her burning the funeral garments, which is embracing tradition and finally being able to, like, commune with T'Challa.
And so it
really, you know, to their credit, like, that is the, like, it's
that
a clear arc. But it took me a couple viewings, I feel like, to realize exactly what they were doing. And I don't know if that just means the movie lends itself to multiple viewings or if it means they missed opportunities.
Well, it seems like such an important arc that you wouldn't want to have people have multiple viewings.
Right. Yeah. No, that's a good point. And I mean, that's a fascinating discussion that I want us to get into at some point. Because I've been thinking a lot lately, and maybe this is just a good way as we're leaning into our rankings here, of transitioning there. One thing that I've always done a lot of, but I've certainly done a lot more of since we started this podcast, is rewatching things and rereading things. Like, I'm a person that's always enjoyed, if I liked something, I like going back and experience it again to see if there's something different that pops out or if it resonates with me differently in a different station of life. And, you know, because of the way we approach these movies especially, I get to do a lot of rewatches in rapid succession. And that even is a different exercise than watching a movie and then watching it again in 2 years, then watching it again in another 3 years or whatever. And I think one thing that's just been brought home to me is how much of a difference there can be between viewings based on, like, what you and I have talked about with, like, the crowd around you, if there is a crowd, if you're at home, if you're in a theater, who you're at the theater with, are you on a date, are you there with your best friend? Like, there are all these things that play into, it's like whenever people talk about how standardized testing is so prejudicial, because what if you're just having a really bad day, right? Like, what if you're sick? What if you didn't sleep well? Like, and so it all comes down to this one day. In some ways, I'm starting to feel more like that about movies, where it's like, man, like, who knows what mood you're going into that in, how maybe you've had, like, for me, I know I've had really busy, like, really stressful days at work. Even, like, we've talked about how No Way Home didn't hit for me as well on the first viewing as it did on the other few. But you probably remember, like, I had to go into No Way Home, like, right after putting out this big work fire, and I was really stressed, and I had a ton going on. And it's like, obviously, the movie is still the movie. I'm not saying that your perception is so altered that you're, like, having a trip or something, but I'm just saying, I think I'm realizing, because of how often we get to do these, I think there's a lot of value in people giving movies a second chance in general. I think there's just I think you will almost always either enjoy the movie or just enjoy the process of seeing what hit you differently. Like, even if you come away and you're like, that's actually worse than I thought it was the first time, I don't think you'll regret having done it. Like, I think it's just a night, like, as we talk about the best way to experience these things, I just don't know that you will ever regret having had the opportunity to kind of sit with something that these people made for a little bit longer.
Totally.
End of rant.
All right, let's do your favorite thing. Let's rank this movie, and I'll give you a quick update to my rewatch and to trivia after a quick word from these sponsors. So, one other tidbit really quickly. As I mentioned in last week's episode, we're going to be launching our YouTube channel, the YouTube portion of this podcast, and hopefully eventually getting video versions of this podcast on Spotify. So if that sounds interesting to you, go to YouTube and search the FFW podcast or Friends from Work, and you can find us. Subscribe to that page, because I think there'll be some fun things there. Like last week's episode, when we react to a trailer, you'll now be able to actually watch the trailer in the episode and see us live react to it, which is kind of fun. Again, those are the kind of things I'm talking about when saying that there'll be some new fun stuff in 2023. So go to YouTube and follow that. And then hopefully, if you don't, follow us on Spotify as well, because eventually, hopefully, the video will be on there as well. So this is really difficult for me to rank, and I'm not the one that says that every week. You're the one that says that usually every time. But for me, things usually fall into place pretty easily. But as I've been doing this rewatch journey and going back and splitting my lists, it's now getting really, really hard to go back to just one list. And I see that that's problematic, right? Because like on our website, I want one official list that is very concise, easy to read. I understand that we can't have four lists on there of 40 projects. It'll just be like nonsense, right? But that is really how I want to do it. Like, I really want to rank this movie when I get through my entire rewatch and put it in a critic and a preference. And so for today's exercise, I'm still going to give it one number, but just know that in like a couple of months when I catch up fully on a rewatch, it will officially be split lists for me. And by the way, I think what the answer to that is I think we need to do one joint Friends from Work ultimate rankings on our website. That's you and I together, come to a consensus, compromise where we have to, but where you can't stand firm and don't.
Never compromise. Like
yeah, no matter what happens. but I think we need to
Such a dangerous philosophy.
It's good for the most part, but yeah, in all situations, maybe not always. Have one list, you know, and then we can have our individual two lists. So that's my disclaimer.
Yeah, no, I what I envisioned for the Friends from Work site is a Friends from Work list that instead of you and I giving our respective rankings here on like critically, I think we would just argue over what we think the critical ranking should be. And then we'll have the Robbie and Kyle's like a favorites list. Because I think that's what the preference list really is, right? It's just like the movies that are kind of your favorites. Like your favorites to watch.
That's what we'll do. We'll do that from now on. For today, we'll still do the exercise of where you think this should go.
Which is perfect because this is the end of phase four, essentially, and the end of season three.
But again, to reiterate, my old rankings is already kind of a combination of the two. This is not strictly critic because I am influenced by some of my favorites here. All right, here we go. we've already summed up Black Panther Wakanda Forever 100 times. Go back and listen to our initial reactions episode. If you've made it this far, you've already listened to this episode. So I feel like I've said most of everything that I want to say about this film. Next mm-hmm. week, we're going to be talking about Phase 4 as a whole. Just the rewatch order, the ranking of it, and what do you expect for Phase 5. I'm really looking forward to that conversation. And some mm-hmm. of this film conversation will fall into that episode still. So there's more coming there. That being said, and this is where it gets so weird, okay? But I am going to rank Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, 14th in my list. Now, hear me out really quickly.
Yeah.
Hear me out really quickly. That's right after Spider-Man Far From Home and ahead of Multiverse of Madness. But it's also ahead of Black Panther in my list. And here's where I really run into a problem, right? Critically, I think Black Panther and Wakanda Forever are so extremely neck and neck. In fact, I debated having them go back to back. And I think in a lot of ways, Black Panther is probably the better critic movie, and so it shouldn't be ahead on my list. But that's where preference comes into play. I think I would rather rewatch Wakanda Forever 7 out of 10 times over Black Panther. And so I'm going to rank this ahead of Black Panther for that reason, knowing that I'm acknowledging that in some ways, in regards to the messaging of the plot, I feel like it's not doing as much as the first, and the things it's trying to do that could have maybe been equal to the first, like we were just talking about, weren't executed perfectly like the first was. Like the message of the first was a 10 out of 10. And here, I like the message they're getting at, but it's like an 8 out of 10 because it's not fully landed.
Right.
But something about Namor, something about the action sequences being ramped up, I just think I enjoy watching this one maybe a little bit more. So I know that's a really ambiguous way of saying it's 14th right now, but just wait till you get to my two lists.
Yeah. No, I really agree with a lot of your breakdown there. And I think it's going to take me a while sitting with this one to know how to rank those two movies against each other for a lot of reasons. Like it's the biggest being... You know, at least when you're ranking like Captain America movies, they're different movies starring Chris Evans, you know, but it's so strange to like, you have totally different. Anyway, my point is it's hard because a lot of the things that I think of the first one doing well, I think this one did as well or better. But I think to your point, the major pro that the first film has over this one is that it doesn't have an Ironheart problem to the extent you agree with me and think that that is a problem. Like, there isn't anything that feels grafted onto that first film. And that's actually, this is a perfect way of me, the one thing that I missed that I was going to come back to earlier, and this will maybe sort of set up my ranking here. I think the movie was just too long. Like, I don't think it needed to be. I am someone that is always fine with longer movies. Like, I am a Lord of the Rings fan. I'm almost like, can you take like 20 minutes of this and give those to Thor Love and Thunder? Because like,
interesting.
You know what I mean? Like, it feels like that movie was one of the first Marvel movies where I was like, yeah, this could have breathed for a second longer in certain spots.
Yeah, and dude.
And then this one, I'm like, man, this is, yeah, like I don't know. It's like they had a little too much time, and I think that that's always dangerous because it just starts to make the story too cumbersome. Whereas the first film was never that,
and we've been consistent with that on this podcast. It's not that we've always said the movies need to be longer or they always need to be shorter.
Right.
It really has been a project by project basis. And in this case, I agree, actually. Like that middle part, like we talked about, it still is a little long. Like you could have trimmed 15 minutes out of there.
Oh, yeah, easily. And I mean, the first part, every time I've watched it so far, the first like third of that movie is almost flawless, in my opinion. Like the, every time I see like the first siren scene, like there are so many things. And I was trying to think through all this when I was ranking, like, yeah, I mean, it's hard because there are just a lot of things that are done really excellently in ways that I was like, oh man, like this is really like a really quality MCU entry. And so, you know,
that's a perfect transition into my final point. Not on this film, my next point. So you do the ranking first. Sorry.
Okay. Okay.
Just,
I'll get my ranking.
Just know then. I'm excited with how perfect that sets up my next
point. Okay. Perfect. you know, going through this also was so difficult because it's such a special movie. I hope that it's unlike any other movie we ever have in the MCU. I know it will be in a lot of ways. You know, but yeah, I mean, just for obvious reasons, there's a lot going on. Like I didn't get to talk about it as much as I wanted to, but like, I would really encourage people to go listen to the Ta-Nehisi Coates, Ryan Coogler interview, because I mean, it's super emotional, hearing Ryan talk about his last days with Chadwick, finding out about Chadwick's death. I think I missed this on my first listen of that episode. I didn't realize he had fully finished the script for this movie and sent it to Chadwick to read. And he said Chadwick all along this way had been super, super involved in the whole process. And which, you know, we've all heard those stories of how much ownership he took of the T'Challa character and the franchise. And so he asked him if he wanted to read the script before he sent it to the studio for notes. And he said that Chadwick said, you know, no, it's fine. Like, I trust you. Like, I don't want to get in the way. And that it was only later that he found out, talking to his family, that at that point he had just been too tired to read anything. And so, but like, I think a couple weeks after that he passed, and Coogler still didn't know he was sick until after his death. And so it's just like, the more I learn about this project, and
that's so sad,
dude. It's brutal. It's so much about it. Like the fact that, like, we've talked about before, I think on the podcast as we were piecing this together, but like, he confirmed that, like, when he met Chadwick in 2015, which I think, you know, was probably right after they finished filming Civil War. Actually, I think he maybe met him on set for Civil War, if I remember correctly. But regardless, he was already sick, like, even back then. And I was watching Civil War recently on this Ant-Man rewatch that I've been doing. And, like, you know, you can tell as the movies go on that Chadwick is kind of losing muscle mass a bit. Like, and I always thought that it was just, like, a change in the style of the character. But, like, even back in like the very first introduction of the character. And so then you think about every stunt that he did, and that's what Ryan talks about on this episode. Like, every decision he made to, like, go the extra mile on these various components of filming, not just the stunts, but also just, like, the long days and the amount of ownership he took, like, is really powerful to think about. And just, I mean, it's a really... Yeah, if you listen to that interview, you should be, if you're somebody that's like prone to be emotional, it's a super emotional conversation. But my point in all that is just to say, like, Ryan Coogler had an insane task.
That's a fair call out.
And so, you know, given all that, with all that in mind, and how hard it is to rank this against other things, for me, this is going to land right around 12 in my rankings.
I think feel that like out. It's totally fair to either say it's towards the bottom of the top tier films in the MCU or towards the very top of that second tier. That's about where I feel like you should probably land.
That's where
I mean, you can rank it wherever you want, but that's where I was thinking it would go.
No, for context, that makes this the highest ranked movie of Phase 4 other than No Way Home for me. So it's above Multiverse of Madness and Love and Thunder, and it's right below Winter Soldier. So, I mean, all things considered, like I'm looking at the movies right above this and it's Winter Soldier, Iron Man, The Avengers, Civil War. Like, you know, it's.
Dude, yeah, see, that's where I need to adjust mine to at some point, because right now, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 are all Phase 4 films. Love and Thunder, know, Black yeah. Widow, Far From Home, Wakanda Forever, Multiverse of Madness. And I don't know about that order yet. Again, I need more time with that specific yeah. chunk. As far as I think I know where they all should go. Like none of those right. hit me as like the very top tier, mm-hmm. but they all were like better than like Age of Ultron, let's say. So
yeah,
it's kind of well, right even, there.
I was actually like, as I was looking at this, thinking I need to revisit my rankings in general. But especially Phase 4, mostly Phase 4. Like, I kind of had the same thought. And again, it's difficult, especially with Multiverse of Madness and Love and Thunder, because those movies were so polarizing that it's like if I spend too much time not watching them, I start to remember them the way that, like, all the people that hated them saying. Remember them.
Yeah, you gotta watch like, them again. Yeah.
Yeah, I just need to get back
into
it.
It becomes less your opinion and more just the online opinion. It grows in your head. Okay, so I want to use those final thoughts to make my last transition into a quick rewatch update and a trivia question for today. First of all, when we were comparing Black Panther and Wakanda Forever, it is interesting because I never feel the emotions as strongly in Black Panther as I do Wakanda Forever, right? It's very similar to
right.
the No Way Home or the Endgame versus Infinity War debate. Like, I don't know that I ever feel mm-hmm. the same depth of emotion there, but it does other things better than the other things. So, like, if you're making subcategories, it would get even more complicated. Right. But you were talking about, first of all, the length of it. I just rewatched Infinity War. I'm sure you saw our Twitter. Uh-huh. I literally live tweeted and stuff.
Excellent. Always good content.
I am not going to get into it again because I did last night. And you have so many different opportunities to go back and listen to my thoughts on Infinity War. You can listen to our full commentary. That's like 2 hours and 40 minutes long of that film live. Mm-hmm. That's one of two times we did that ever. So you can find that episode on our feed still way back in 2020 yep. probably. And then we've reflected on those two movies, Infinity War and Endgame, so many times. So I'm not getting into it. There's just a couple quick points here. I always remember when I'm watching Infinity War what you said in that first episode about how the pacing is so elite in that film. Like every single time that you're thinking to yourself, oh, I wonder what Tony's doing, it cuts to Tony. Mm-hmm. Oh, man, we haven't seen Black Panther yet in this episode. Drums come in, now we're going there. It's like every time you want something, it's like the Russo's anticipated that and they give it to mm-hmm. you. Piggybacking off what we just said, man, I do miss T'Challa. Holy smokes. Like it's yeah. weird how this worked out where I'm doing a Wakanda Forever reflection episode the day after watching Infinity War again for the first time in a long time. And I undersold how much I'm going to miss him. I think like, it's just yeah. weird. It's just weird to not have him there anymore. He is one of my favorite parts of that movie. Like the battle yeah. in Wakanda is unbelievable, but it's not as special if he's not there. So I am thankful that we had that moment yeah. with him. And I know I don't know him personally. So, you know, I don't know him at all personally, but it's just a bummer to not have him in the MCU anymore. And bummer yeah. is underselling it. It's actually a horrible tragedy that he's not here.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's so,
I know we've said that 100 times, but it's just weird if you watch those two movies right now.
Yeah, and like we've also said 100 times, obviously we're not saying that the loss of the character is in any way equal to the loss of the person, and that's a given. But even the loss of the character is just like, to your point, like thinking about that finished script, like I was saying, like, man, I've said on this podcast so many times how some of my favorite comics interactions are between the T'Challa and Namor characters. It's so good. And again, to Coogler's credit, he gave me a lot of what I like about those interactions in Wakanda Forever and just substituted Shuri, who has also had some solid Namor interactions in the comics. But like, yeah, I'm thinking of the version of this movie that Ryan initially penned that would have had T'Challa and Namor kind of wrestling with these things and what that would have looked like. And like, I'm like, man, I really want to see that movie.
I know.
So yeah, I'm with you.
Regarding the pacing, Infinity War is almost 3 hours, 2 hours, 40 something minutes, I think. And that's an example of it never wastes a second. I never feel like it's too long.
Yeah.
So it's not just the length, it is the pace of it. The movie is literally, and I can't emphasize this enough, a masterpiece. It is a masterpiece. It's a masterpiece.
Yeah.
The music is like God tier. The performances, the visuals, the special effects team, like it's comical that in the same year Black Panther was nominated for visual effects and Infinity War wasn't. Not the costume design,
yeah, it is
the
wild.
Visual effects. Are you kidding me? It is peak MCU. So just go back and listen to my thoughts or go read our tweets. There's so many. Dude, the second Thanos beats the crap out of the Hulk, it's like, what a tone shift.
Yeah.
To have him beat the crap out of the Hulk. You're immediately in 1 second. Like in a 10-second scene, you're like, oh my gosh, they're screwed.
Uh-huh.
Because if the Hulk can't do it, like what?
You know, it's, yeah. I think what's so interesting to me about Infinity War, because I was thinking about it watching your live tweet, that was the first time that Marvel Studios has really felt like Marvel Comics to me, in that, and I remember even seeing a lot of comics writers saying similar things at the time, saying like, they just made a comic event into a movie, where it's like, you know, you have these kind of traditional like 5 to 7 or more issue arcs that are like these big event blockbuster sell comics things with all the crossover characters. And we had never had something like that, where it's like you check in all over the world with different people and then how they're, and then they all kind of culminate in these big battles. And the thing about Infinity War that I think I finally realized is, if you view Infinity War and Endgame as part of kind of one event and one story, which I think is fair, and that's why we always have them back to back in the watch order, I think that part of why Infinity War never has any of the like little nitpicks that I feel in parts of Endgame is, Infinity War has all the benefits of the best parts of those comics events, which are the ramp up.
And like, it doesn't have to end it.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's like, I think that in terms of like consistency, I think that the MCU, like if we're talking strictly quality control, right? Like we're not talking about like highest highs, although there are some contenders there too, but just quality control.
The highest score. Yeah.
I think the MCU might have, at least as of now, peaked with Infinity War. And like, I'm not saying that that can't change. And by the way, I'm not saying the MCU has gone downhill and that everything's terrible.
Here
I'm
we just go. Saying, 90 like, minutes into the episode.
I'm just saying, I think I've thought this quietly to myself for a bit now. Like, the difference between Infinity War and any other movie that's come out after Infinity War is, including Endgame, there's just never a moment in that movie.
Yeah, it's perfect. That's the difference, for real.
There's nothing in that movie that I quibble with. Now, obviously, other people may disagree and do. I mean, it has like an 80-something percent rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
Because that's where it's different is the payoff is not in like landing the plane or this crazy emotional work. The payoff is that it's paced perfectly. There's not a single thing to quibble with. And they're banking on those interactions of those comic events being so special. Like the whole movie is just like, wow, it's fun to see Doctor Strange with Tony. Wow, it's fun to see Tony and Spider-Man. Wow, it's fun to see Guardians with Thor. Oh my goodness, now the Guardians are with Tony. Oh my goodness, Steve is with Vision.
Like, they should throw a lot of things into the pot.
Right, but it's like everything you've ever wanted. It's like, oh my gosh, now we're getting to see Rhodey hang out with T'Challa.
Right. And grounded by this incredible villain performance at the center of it, which is obviously
exactly. Exactly.
It's
fascinating.
I do think it's so funny. Yeah, you're right. We can't get into it anymore here, but I think
I have so much to say, but I've already said it.
if we ever get into, especially if we ever get into Lord of the Rings, which we may or may not do, but I really think it's a lot like this is two films and those are three, but like I always debate whether my favorite Lord of the Rings movie is The Fellowship or Return of the King, because I love so much of the setup and having all the characters together, which is similar to here. But some of those final emotional payoff moments in Return of the King are so huge that it's like one of the few movies that would always make me tear up growing up. But I would also argue I have a couple issues with a few moments in Return of the King that I don't have at all in Fellowship. Like, and so it's almost the exact same thing. And I think what you just said is right, where it's like one has to land the plane and the other doesn't. And that is an inherent burden that allows you the opportunity of kind of soaring to greater heights in moments, but also I think is sort of a liability if you're strictly looking at just like scene for scene hits.
Okay, last thing, and then I swear I won't go on an Infinity War tangent. You turn off the movie, and in regards to quality and taking into consideration everything we just said about preference and stuff, it is truly one of the best movies of the last 10 years, I think. And I think Endgame has to be in that conversation as well. Like, if you were making a top 25 list of, like, since the 2000s, I think you'd have to include them for what they meant for film and just how well they age. Here's my final point, and we've said this so many times, but I was watching that final scene, the perfection of the snap going off and all the music stopping and no one talking, the people start disappearing. I'm remembering how shocking that was at the time. And then Cap only saying, "Oh God." And it's not like a curse. Right. It's more like a plea, like, "Oh no."
Yeah.
Like, I just realized what happened. And it's silent. Then Porch starts, which I think is Alan Silvestri's greatest thing he's ever done. I tweeted him that yesterday. Or on Instagram. And one of my thoughts right then and there is, man, they found a way to make the stakes of that feel so real that even to this day, I'm still emotional about it. Mm-hmm. And because they dragged out the effects of that movie in Endgame for so long, like for 5 years, we've now talked about those movies. Uh-huh. They got away with this, which is awesome. But this I was going to say, I'm sitting there thinking, man, that scene with Wanda and Vision is so powerful that she has to destroy him.
Mm-hmm.
And then it gets reversed. And then Thanos rips it out of his head. You know what I'm going to say? Do we need White Vision then? Do I need a White Vision? Then I was thinking, man, that scene is so hard to watch as a dad of Thanos throwing Gamora off the cliff. And I thought to myself, do I need Gamora to be back now because of that? Then I think about how emotional all the dustings are. And then I'm like, wait, they reverse all the dustings. Like, they've done a good job of making us feel the impact regardless.
Mm-hmm.
But you zoom out and you're like, everything got reversed almost.
Low-key.
So anyways, don't start that discussion. But like,
yeah, no. And I think that there are different valid arguments to be made for each quote unquote reversal. But yeah, I do see what you mean. The thing I'm most thankful for though, is that they didn't I've said this a million times, the decision to not have the snap basically go back in time to 5 years ago and make none of it ever happen, but to just bring everyone back. Cause that like,
that gave more consequences to the, yeah.
I mean, it did impact people and, you know, and it still ultimately ends with Tony Stark being dead and Steve Rogers being gone. And so it, you know, it feels like all of that.
Yeah, even if you do them both as one story, yes.
Right, true. But yeah, I see what you mean. Just Infinity War
by itself. I haven't seen Endgame yet. Yeah.
Right.
All right, real quick, If you've made it this far, you are a diehard, and we love you for it. So I'm going to update you with the trivia. You still have a chance to win a shirt if you're still listening. So here you go. By way of a quick update, Robbie, my last question was from Ant-Man and the Wasp, and I said, true or false, de-aging technology was used on Lawrence Fishburne's character. Get this. The answer is false. His son, his son plays the flashbacks of Bill Foster.
No way.
Which is so cool, which is why I found that.
And there's is there any like visual, like did they make him look like Lawrence Fishburne?
Maybe. I don't know. I just read that as a fun fact that it's at least some of the scenes are his son Langston.
Okay.
Which I just thought was pretty cool. But yeah, they maybe have edited his face still. Yeah, but.
Right.
Wow. That's a cool fun fact.
I like that. I like that.
All right. Two questions for this week. I want to talk about this so bad. I want to talk about Infinity War and Ragnarok again, but I don't have time. I don't have time. Maybe next week in the Phase 4 reflection, we can talk about a few of those things.
Well, and
From Thor Ragnarok. I want to talk about it so badly. Dang it. From Thor Ragnarok. How many PhDs does Banner say he has?
This is, I have to say, this is our second take of this question because I got so excited to answer that I just answered the first take.
I still laugh so hard when he's like, what are we disguised as? Tony and the Gypsy. Okay. None of them are for flying alien spaceships.
Why are you being so weird?
Use one of your PhDs. Why are you being so weird? My favorite line, I think, sorry, that whole, okay, that's one of my favorite scenes when Bruce is finally back, not as Hulk.
Yeah.
One of my favorite lines ever, he's like, I'm on another planet. He's like, you've been on a planet? Yeah, one. Well, now you've been on two. Okay. From Avengers Infinity War. And here we go. This, to me, is impossibly difficult. Impossibly difficult. Then I thought to myself, maybe this is a comics thing and it's not going to be difficult at all to other people. I don't know this. So this could be a comics thing and people are going to be, oh yeah, it's obvious. Who is Thanos's father? Because they mention it one time when he sees Red Skull and he says, Thanos, son of...
Yeah,
is that obvious or is that not obvious?
No, I don't think it is. I'm curious now. I actually don't remember what they say in the movie. I remember what they like what it is in the comics. And I kind of want to go back and see if it's the same. I assume it would be, but
well, you'll find out.
Yeah, good question. Good question.
Well, so that's what I meant. It's either impossibly difficult if it's not like a reference to something.
Right.
Or it's incredibly obvious if it's the same name as the comics and that's like a big character. So there you go.
Good.
Well, Robbie, anything else? You feeling good?
Well, I'm feeling good. This is great as you're wrapping up your Infinity Saga portion of the rewatch because next week, as we're doing the Phase 4 reflections, it's also going to be the perfect time for us to unveil the new Phase 4 watch order that we've finally put into place now that Phase 4 is officially over. And so that'll be a good time to do that.
Honestly, we didn't plan this, but it literally couldn't be better timing because I'm going to watch Endgame this week and then I'm going to actually text you. All right, what do I start with?
Yeah. And it'll be fun because it will also be accompanied as always by the update of the Journey Through the MCU playlist, which will look a lot different, not in content, but in structure because some of Phase 4 did move around some over the course of the last few months with different releases and even things that were initially placed in one place and moved back. And so I'm really happy with where it landed. And I'm really curious to see, you're going to get a chance to actually experiment with the watch order before I do, just given how far you are in it. And so, that'll be fun.
All right. So here's your homework, everyone. What were your thoughts on Black Panther? Where does it rank for you? You could post your rankings in our Slack channel. You can find that Slack channel by going to our website, theffwpodcast.com, and click join the Slack. While you're at the website, send us a message through the contact form there and check out our merchandise under the shop. I'll get you those shirts before Christmas. Don't forget to get your trivia answers in. Start preparing your mind for the friendlies, if you are a Friends From Work Plus patron, and if you're not a Friends From Work Plus subscriber, maybe check out Friends From Work Plus. It's a good time. Like I said, Andor Movie Club on there now or coming up this week, and Creed is on there as well as a bunch of comic stuff and other fun discussions. Don't forget to check out epicheroshop.com if you're looking for another gift idea of more nerd merchandise. And follow us on our socials, which now includes YouTube as well. And just know, we are so excited to jump into season 4, phase 5 with you guys. We've been talking about it so much behind the scenes. New video, new content, new Marvel stuff, just all kinds of fun ideas that we're so excited for. So phase 4 reflection next week, and then we're going to jump right into that stuff after Christmas. We hope everyone is having an awesome holiday season. We love you all so much. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting us all these years. And we'll talk to you next week here on Friends From Work.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk.
Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.